Hi, I'm Paul Yeager, and this is the M2M Podcast. A little admission here. I'm a child of the 80s. No other way to put it. When I grew up on a farm, right, over there, I was told that, you know, maybe there's other jobs outside of agriculture. But I wasn't thinking about that at that time. I was thinking about other things like broadcasting, and here I am now. But the importance of a teacher can make all the difference in how what you've got a background in, what an interest in, and maybe where you're going. And Monty Collins of Pleasantville, Iowa, has been that guy for so many, for so long. Pleasantville is east of Des Moines, in a community that values the FFA program, the Voc Ag program, and values what he has done for his students over the years. So today we're going to have a conversation with him about teaching, what it was like in 1989 when he started, to what it's like now, kind of what that program has developed, how he inherited some things, how he's leaving things for the next generation that's going to be coming through Pleasantville High School. We're going to talk about some traditional aspects of agriculture education, but how he is always learning and always figuring out what is best for his students as we continue to talk about vocational agriculture as well as agriculture education, which is something we have done on Market to Market with our classroom project. So if you are an ag educator and you're not familiar, check out markettomarket.org/classroom. And while we're at it, let's just continue to tell people if you want to be a part of our team as well and value the work that we do, hit markettomarket.org/donate, and a gift to our program could end up in this headed to your home or office or maybe someone else that you like. Thanks to those that have already purchased and shown me their pictures. So today, Monty Collins is our guest on the MTOM Show podcast. Again, you can find us wherever you get podcasts, also on our YouTube channel, where we have a specific playlist that puts all of these conversations together that we've done, a lot of them here in video in 2021. So now, please enjoy today's conversation. Do you even say the R word yet? Like, I'm going to be retired. I mean, does that even cross your mind that this is actually it?
Boy, it slapped me in the face last week. We had our FFA banquet, which fairly early compared to a lot of ag programs in the state. But that was tough. That was very emotional. And to get through that, I think it's starting to sink in. And yeah, everybody asks, am I counting the days? My wife says to answer that, well, no, we're just making sure the days count. But it's starting to hit.
Yeah. Well, so you're at your FFA banquet, and you have been the advisor, I'm told, 32 years. Is that accurate?
That's correct.
So 32 years. So what year was your first year? Do the math
for me. It was the fall of 89. My oldest daughter, Kaisha, was born the first day of school, so I missed the first day of school.
But not many since then, I'm guessing.
No. No.
So 32 years, 1989. You're teaching in your home area, Pleasantville. What was? Correct. Did you ever think as a student that you're coming back to be a teacher there?
No, that was the furthest thing from my mind. I would never have guessed, and people that knew me would never have guessed me to predict to be a teacher, just based on how quiet I was and reserved. But boy, you know, I loved agriculture so much. My advisor, Russ Johnson, had just inspired me to turn me on FFA and agriculture that in a way that, you know, I decided I'm going to take off and pursue that. See where it takes me.
So where'd you go to college at?
I actually went to my first 2 years, and this is a guy that wasn't sure that I would even make it through college. First in the either side of the family to attend college, but I started off at Iowa Lakes Community College, mm-hmm. and because they had a neat ag transfer program, and I had a classmate from Pleasantville that was headed that way, and so Well, we had some rough winters up there. He took off and transferred to Yuma, Arizona, or to Arizona State, and I transferred to Iowa State, and 2 years later graduated.
Iowa Lakes, for those who might not know, in Iowa, is in the northwest part of the state. So that was a haul. I mean, I could see from your area, people would say they go to Indian Hills or DMAC or, you know, something maybe closer. But that was a little fish out of water, I would imagine.
It sure was. And for me, a small town country boy, it was a long ways from home. The land was flat and so productive, but. Yeah, but they had that ag transfer program, which was unique in the state, that had lined up that you can transfer to Iowa State smoothly after 2 years. And that's, I thought, well, maybe 4 years of college. That's what hooked me anyway.
And then you where did you student teach at?
I student taught at a great site. It was with Mark Williams, who's also a Pleasantville graduate, but over in Pella, at Pella Public. And student taught over there, and a lot of fond memories with tulip time and everything that goes with that.
And then was Pleasantville the first and only job?
My first and only job, correct.
Wow. So that just doesn't happen anymore with teachers. Well, I mean, I'm sure you've seen that change over time.
Yes. And I guess I need a backstep. My first job, I'm thinking teaching. I actually taught in Redwood Falls, Minnesota, my first 2 years. Graduated from Iowa State in 87 and got to teach in Redwood Falls 2 years. And then people started calling about an opening back in my hometown, and one thing led to another.
Well, let's go back into your college again. I want to finish up something there. You're going to college in a time when agriculture was in an incredible transformation, depression. It was a tough time. Was there any thought of doing something other than teaching? I mean, did you want a farm? Did you want a job in agriculture? I mean, you say you knew about this ag transfer program, but what was in your mind of, I still want to be involved, but I might not be able to be involved in the traditional sense.
Well, sure. My gosh, I loved agriculture, but you're right. That was near the end of the farm crisis. Things were tough. I would have loved to farm full time, but Dad was a factory worker in Ankeny at John Deere. He had been for 30 years, and he had 300 or 400 acres. So we got to grow up as small farmers, I guess, with hogs and cattle and crops. So there wasn't an opportunity to come back and farm, though looking back at land prices then, it sure would have been nice to picked up a few thousand acres. But no, it was hard. Interest rates were over 20% interest. I pursued a degree in agriculture back then, and I think even still today, that degree at Iowa State in agricultural education was talked about as a universal major in agriculture that would qualify you for a lot of jobs in ag business, animal science, agronomy, just a wide spectrum. And I love so much about all of agriculture. I thought that'd be a good fit. And so a lot of us then pursued that degree at Iowa State with no intention to teach. But it hooked some of us sometimes, and it got me, I guess.
When you look at the type of student you were, and I don't mean academically, but the type of students with similar situation. Yes, I want to be involved in agriculture, but the opportunity isn't quite there. I may have to go to a different door. Has that helped you when students have come through in 32 years of helping them understand there's more to life than just planting a crop in April and harvesting it in October?
Yeah, I think my background has probably helped. You know, there's students that come through our doors that we don't have to worry about inspiring too much. I think they have that inspiration. They're locked on and focused and ready to go. But for a lot of students that sometimes we forget about in education, I hope I've been someone that's been able to have a conversation with them to get them thinking about something different and other opportunities. So we got a job shadowing program. I I expect students to job shadow each semester for a couple hours, and one of those has to be an ag area. The other time could be a non-ag area, and I think that helps students to open doors and see opportunities also. But
when did you start that project?
Oh, I'd say roughly 10 years ago.
Was there a reason for that?
I had some students that were, I think, struggling with agricultural projects. We expect the kids all to have SAE projects, supervised agricultural experience projects. And some students just were kind of clueless yet, as a typical freshman maybe should be, to keep their eyes open and explore through high school. But that job shadowing program, I just thought would be, what a neat way to get kids out of the classroom, out in the real world with somebody, whether it's a veterinarian or a game warden or an electrician or a welder, diesel mechanic, just for a couple hours where they can see if that's a fit for them. If it feels good, they could see themselves doing that. And had a lot of success stories I could share with you with that. It's opened up a lot of opportunities.
Has that been one of the greatest rewards of education for you?
I sure think so. You like to think you're making an impact. In my younger days, that was hard to see, just because you don't get to hear some of the stories from graduates, because you haven't had a lot of graduates maybe come through the program. And in a time that it's, you know, that's our single greatest threat or challenge with ag education, is to recruit and retain qualified teachers. I think our younger teachers need to hear those stories. But no, things like that, just I feed off of those stories that reinforces the ideas I have in my head that, oh, maybe this is a good thing, and we should keep expecting it to happen, and it helps me keep going.
Monty, you and I first crossed paths in Ankeny, where your dad worked, but at the DMAC campus with the Ag Educators of Iowa. And I'm always intrigued at that conference by the amount of learning that goes on, and how you all give up a week or 4 days in June when you're supposed to be on break, but you're all together to try to figure out different ways to teach or different strands that could help, and network and say, oh, they were doing this at Southeast Calhoun, or they're doing this in Decorah. You didn't give up on learning either. I mean, let's be honest here. I mean, that's helped you, I would imagine.
Oh my gosh, I've learned right with my students over all these years. That Ag Teachers Conference we have every year in the summer is such a wealth of opportunity to collaborate, and it's our big professional development session for the year. So we get to be linked up with community colleges and state colleges, business and industry through tours, speakers, workshops, people like you with Market to Market being there to help share resources that we can use in the classroom. So no, it's, you come away from that thing, I've always got a list of things to do. A list, whether they have to do with FFA, the classroom, building something new, names, phone numbers. It's a wealth of information. I think we're so fortunate as an ag teaching profession to have that. And I know my wife's involved in education. I know we have Math Teachers of Iowa and different groups there too. But boy, the Ag Teachers of Iowa, they know how to collaborate and share and support each other. And yeah, we borrow a lot of ideas from each other.
That's okay. I think that's what it's supposed to be about.
I hope so. It's all about the kids.
Yeah. It is. And I will say, and I'm trying to remember as you were saying what you just did about how, who I've had this conversation with, but in the 10 years that I think, or 8 that I've been attending this conference on and off, just a day, I've noticed a transformation of it's now from men to women. How many women teachers there are? You've become the dinosaur in the room, and it's all of these energetic young teachers. They just happen to be women, but yeah, the industry is changing. all throughout agriculture. And so I would imagine a 16-year-old girl that walked into your classroom in 1989 or 90 has a whole different view and set of, I can do whatever I want now. And that is probably, I would guess, one of the biggest changes you've seen.
Yeah, it's just such an even playing field. I don't know where we would be without FFA membership, without female students in the classroom, women, lady ag teachers across the United States. We'd be in a world of hurt. So we're very thankful for that. But yeah, you're right. When I go to those conferences, year one, year two, I'd look around the room and remember Cheryl Ann Stewart, Southeast Warren at the time, Mrs. Susan Grubel at Sheraton, and she's still at Sheraton, but that may have been Barb Limmer, but three or four or five from across, Ellen Daisy, but now it's equal or dominated by ladies,
which is fine, which is the way the industry has worked, and it's been great. Over 32 years, you've also evolved in your classroom. You talked about the job shadows, but you've also brought the outside world into your classroom. Where, kind of tell some folks about how some of those partnerships you've developed.
Yeah, I think we've had to. When I started back at the end of the farm crisis in Redwood Falls, Minnesota, I marveled over how those farmers were trying to exist and survive with, actually had a couple of classes I taught on diversified agriculture. And then I think back to the Successful Farmer Adapt conferences, but all the speakers I would bring into the classroom or field trips we would go on to learn about, you know, converting a hog building over to raising hydroponic tomatoes, or going out to a llama farm, or a farm that completely revamped their dairy barn into a air-conditioned mushroom barn where they grew mushrooms. I can go on and on with so many different types of enterprises. So that's, yeah, I was learning right along with the students, and still do with the speakers. And I think you've got to do that, obviously. In agriculture, I guess we're surrounded by that in Iowa, so it's easy to bring in speakers and take kids on trips that let someone share a story.
And you have a birdie, our friend Steve Woodhouse, had kind of told me that you have a partnership. I believe it's called Trojan Ironworks as well. What's that about?
That's, so a lot of my teaching I've converted to project-based learning. And so a lot of the classes I have, that one, for example, is a metals fabrication class. And we've got an awesome a metal shop in our program, full of new welders and plasma cutters and a plasma cam, a CNC cutting machine, most of which has been afforded to us by business partnerships with the Vermeer Foundation in Pella and the Weiler Group in Knoxville, Iowa. Their partnership financially and with job shadows and tours has just been huge. But so we've started business around that. Students come into the class and they learn how to do the engineering. They get to design things on a computer, whether it be a sign or a stake to put in the yard, some type of artwork. And then they run the business, they cut out, and they divide into teams, and you've got students running the CNC table and students involved in marketing and promotion, students involved in prep and painting and welding and still do the design part of it. They all work together. We have team meetings, you know, before we go out to the shop and work for that day. But, yeah, they run a business, and they get to share in some of the profits. So it's incentivized in that most of those projects I have are entrepreneurship based. So I'm really trying to promote entrepreneurship and get kids thinking about small business and how they fit in with that.
All right. I'm not going to say you have to give me the exact success rate, but how many of those kids have turned that into full-time work, or at least a majority of their work?
I don't know what. That'd be hard with statistics we don't have in front of us, but I can tell you one thing. At Pleasantville, our guidance counselor, I think he shared with me 5-6 years ago, and it caught me off guard. He said that he'll survey all of the graduating seniors, all of them, whether they've been in ag or not, and ask where they're planning to pursue, what career, whether it's health and the healthcare industry or business or agriculture, on and on. And so I know now for at least the last 5 or 6 years running, agriculture has been the number one route for Pleasantville students. If you saw the chart, agriculture is like way up here and everything else drops down to this. So that's, I don't know. It's hard to quantify all these things, but that feels really good too.
Do you consider that a success then?
I think that's hopefully successful. But of course, you know, sometimes we don't hear it even within the media. So like 60% of the jobs in Iowa can be related to agriculture. Now that's, some people look at agriculture and they think of ag business and farming, but the way we were trained at Iowa State, when we think of agriculture, we can't forget aquaculture industry, the horticulture industry, forestry, natural resources, all of this being agriculture. So, yeah, it probably should be the top career path for every high school in Iowa, but I'm glad to see it is for Pleasantville anyway.
Well, describe for those that might not be familiar with Pleasantville, you're what, 35 minutes from Des Moines, 25 from Pella, not even that to Pella.
Yeah, we're in between Pella, Indianola, Knoxville, Des Moines, Sheraton, kind of in the middle of all those towns. But yeah, we're in a good location. We're close to I-80, I-35, close to Ankeny and Ames, with things that happen there, agriculturally speaking. Close to Des Moines, we could be to the south side of Des Moines in 20 minutes on the 4-lane. So.
And your dad, boy, he did drive a ways, didn't he, when he went to work?
He did. He was not fond of that drive, about 45-minute drive back in the day.
And it wasn't 4-lane very much of that.
No, it was not. No.
He probably could have gone maybe straight north to 80 and over, but I'm sure, like many, they take the back roads. He knew all the shortcuts.
Exactly right. Right by the tornado at Adventureland, I know, was on his path, and yeah, cutting back and forth.
He couldn't do that route as quickly today. There's a lot more traffic in between the two towns.
My, how things have grown.
Yeah. As you see jobs change and you see those communities evolve, and if you've still got your students involved in agriculture, the job has changed, the variety of job has changed. But and we talked about the Ag Educators Conference, but how well do you think educators in Iowa are adapting in real time to what students need as communities in their own state change?
Well, I think agriculture, I guess to, like to brag about our profession, but I think our teachers are very much on the cutting edge, because we're continually involving business and industry with our programs, and whether it's through the speakers and field trips or partnerships in the classroom, students placement sites where they're out working part-time jobs at different businesses. We all have advisory committees we have representation on those committees from business and industry that helps us to stay in focus with local community needs. And so I think we're well in tune overall as a group. Can we do better? Probably everywhere, even at Pleasantville. But overall, I think we're in pretty good shape.
Do you ever see that your job has turned into a little bit of an economic development position?
Oh,
because
sure.
You're trying to diversify a workforce?
Yeah, I think I saw that from the get-go. Like you said, starting off after the farm crisis, it really hit home on the importance that ag education could afford to communities, to help keep young people in the communities on the farm, hope to see them grow into families in that community. And it came at a time that when I started, there were so many parents and grandparents were promoting and pushing their sons and daughters to anything besides agriculture. You know, get off the farm, leave the farm, forget it, head somewhere else. So that was tough to recruit and keep a program going, and that was all over. FFA membership and students in Iowa and much of the United States crashed. And just a couple of years ago here, we've recently finally got back up to the numbers we had prior to the farm crisis. And I know Scott Johnson would tell us we are just a handful of students away from breaking a record, an FFA membership record in Iowa. So, yeah, I think that economic development picture is huge, but we're all involved with that, and that's part of our programs and how we offer and teach.
Let's go back to 1989 a little bit, though. Tell me about the membership in 1989 of your FFA club versus now. What is their future? I mean, we've talked about the diversification of things, but are they the same or are they different?
Yeah, I'd say when in 89, when I started at Pleasantville, we had an outstanding agricultural teacher, FFA advisor, Russ Johnson. And our membership, memory serves me correct, was somewhere around 50 students in FFA. And I think that was strong compared to a lot of communities for schools our size. So we were not too far off at all. In fact, I was always just hoping to maintain and keep things, because it was tough to follow his fill in his shoes after he had been there. And I'm thankful I had a couple of years under my belt at Redwood Falls. But membership overall was low. You get to some programs and it'd be in the teens or less than teens. Yep. And now I see over 100 students a day, and I think of them, 94 are high school students. So I'm not sure. We have maybe 230 students approximately in our high school.
It's a good percentage.
Yeah, yep.
Now, you also have involvement that's in more of what you'd call traditional agriculture. I believe you have a livestock farm, too.
Sure we do. I could probably be looked upon as kind of an old-fashioned teacher sometimes, because we have all these entrepreneurship projects and class projects, though the students still have to have their own individual projects outside of class. So we have like the freshmen come on board and they're faced with a pig project. So they, out of their FFA farm, our livestock farm, we have opportunity there for them to, I think last fall they picked up and bought 8 feeder pigs, and then they would chore them out to finish, and then they sold half hogs. So they were completely involved with the budgeting, marketing, nutrition, everything about it to the chore schedule. The sophomores have 2 crop plots. So we've got our own planter, and they plant corn and soybeans in crop plots. So they have to learn to drive a tractor and tune up a row on the old 7,000 planter. But we've got some precision ag components on that, so it works quite well, actually. The juniors are just now looking at a cattle project, so they'll be purchasing. Some years they borrow $20,000 and they buy some calves to feed out to market halves and quarters of beef, which I believe that's one of their projects they're planning to do this year. And then they're going to background some calves. Sometimes they feed out, or sometimes they calve out some cows or develop some heifers. But yeah, several, I can go on and on about the class projects. But
I think so you do have some that end up into that? From those class projects?
And that's been neat to see students that will, you know, maybe they're city kids, town kids, and I don't know, after the program, you know, they head to Iowa State or Northwest Missouri State and or a community college, and then before you know it, they're an agronomist or they're our local ag banker. I could just share stories with kids that did not grow up on a farm. But they had some involvement in FFA, maybe some 4-H, but they had a chance to be part owner of 20 acres of crops or be part owner of a cattle herd. Because if we're going to go out and buy, oh, 5 calves to feed out or 8 cows to calve out, we act as if we've got 800. We try to do everything to the book and professionally and act like we have big numbers.
That's okay. So you're seeing that cycle then, as you talk about the grandparents and parents of the 80s push out. Now there's probably somebody that maybe had a grandparent or great-grandparent, and they might be returning. It is coming cycle for you.
Yes, it is. I have several of my students. I had their moms or dads as a student. So, and that's been neat. Number one, I'm just shocked. Having had their parents 30 years ago, I'm surprised. A lot of us as teachers, we don't think we did a very good job our first few years. We were so green and made so many mistakes, still do. But I think it's quite astonishing that some of these parents will steer their kids back towards the ag program of Mr. Collins or whoever. So that's neat to see.
Your alum network is strong. You've talked about and all of the roles. And you mentioned, let's go back full circle to the beginning of our conversation. You talked about the FFA banquet. And the emotions that are coming around as you start to look at all these kids that are coming back and the imprint that you've left and the teachers have left on things. Has it hit you yet that chapter is getting close to getting the final verse written?
Yeah, I think the banquet really woke me up to it, I guess. That really woke me up to it. I'd ask our business manager when talking about my last day or trying to plan out my the rest of my tenure, I guess. And he gave me the date of May 27th, so that kind of hit me like, wow, I don't even go into the summer. So it will, yeah. And I have a student teacher who interviewed for my position and was hired for my position. So I think that's very, very unique, him being Chandler Johnner, which you probably remember as our past state FFA president a year ago. So Chandler's a fine young man, and that hits me too. In fact, it kind of brings it all final, like this is going to be it.
So Chandler comes in. I guess he'll have nothing to do with FFA then. If he was the past president, he's just going to throw that out the window. Yeah. That's what Monty did. I don't want anything to do with it.
He's going to take it to a whole nother level, I think. He's set up with the support we have in the community and the students we have in the program right now. I just think he can take it to a whole nother level, which will be fun to watch and see.
So has he had a conversation with you about how you stay involved?
How I stay involved with
Pleasantville.
We have, and I, like the FFA advisor I tried to replace, I told Chandler that I plan to distance myself from the program. I just want to make sure the kids know that he's their teacher and the FFA advisor, but so that'll be hard, but I'll stay away from that but yet hopefully be there for a resource if he ever needs to call or needs me to stop by after hours, then hopefully I can help him out.
Go ahead.
He has quite a network, as you could imagine. So I'm not so sure how much he'll need me or want me around, but yeah, that's how that's going to work.
Well, let him know. Market to Market's always here to help him.
Yeah.
Let him know that.
I sure will.
Are you going to just give up teaching completely? Are you going to sub in other districts?
I think so. I don't have a desire to sub. I drive a school bus for FFA things. I've always had my bus driver's license, and I asked our local transportation director if he needed me or thought he would need me for that. And he said no. So I thought, okay, that's fine. He and I we've shared some fishing trips together, so we're all okay with that. But no, I don't plan to substitute at this time or be involved with that. I I'm just looking forward to a few other things, I guess.
Good. Good for you. Well, I know that from those that have worked with you, whether it was professionally or in the classroom, they're going to miss you, and I know you'll miss them, but that's part of life, is there's chapters.
Yep, sure is.
All right. Monty, thank you so much for the time, and good luck.
You're most welcome. Thank you. Thanks for the attention you're bringing to ag education. Appreciate it.
My thanks to Monty Collins. Best to him in the next chapter, which is coming all too quickly for him as he reflects and moves on. Thank you for your time. If you have an idea, hit me up. Paul.Yeager, that's Y-E-A-G-E-R, at iowapbs.org. Thank you so very much for watching, listening, or reading. Glad to have you here, and we'll see you next time.